This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. I'm John Williams. How are you today? And hopefully things are going well for you. We're in the 18th story downtown Chicago at 303 East Wacker, and it looks lovely in the city as we stand here and look outside. And some of the numbers are pretty good today, too. We're looking at generally green screens, entirely green screens on the indices, and they're up nicely. One of the things that might be helping drive some of that, and it's that maybe trade with China is going to be okay. Isn't it interesting that almost every day you can find very positive news and you can find very negative news? Unemployment is staggering, and yet it's a lot better. The market is down, but it's a lot better. It's really a glass is half full or empty thing. And on the half full side today, you might include that Dr. Anthony Fauci is saying that we are still on track to, by the end of this year, have a vaccine in the United States for COVID-19. Wow. That's good news. Do you trade on that? Does that give you more confidence that the economy will rebound sooner than later? There are several stocks that are performing pretty well today, too. Let's get started with John Najarian. He joins us on Tuesdays at this time, founder of MarketRebellion.com. It's a financial news, education, and subscription site. He usually has a stock of the day or two for us himself. Hi, John, and welcome back. How are you today?
I am doing well, enjoying the show.
Isn't it true? Do you, well, maybe you don't agree with me, but on any given day, you could look at the news, not only financially, but of the world, and be very positive or very negative.
Absolutely. You know, there are those that are going to look at the huge outperformance yet again of the NASDAQ, and in particular of the top five or six stocks, the so-called mega caps. They account for nearly $6 trillion of market cap, just those six stocks. And they'll look at that and they'll say, well, but that shows it's a bubble because these stocks go up every day. Whether the market goes up or down, these stocks go up. First of all, of course, that's not true, but they'll say it nonetheless. And so those people would be pointing to the glass half empty. And many of us would instead look at it and say, but look at why they're going up. They're going up because many of us are still working remotely. These are stocks that benefit from that remote work, whether it's cloud security, cloud itself, through Microsoft and Amazon, because obviously they have multiple levers they can pull in terms of their revenue. One of the biggest stocks in the world, Apple, how many different business lines does Apple have? You know, services. That's nearly 20% of their business right now, and that is something none of us really see on a daily basis. And the phone sales and the iMacs, or Macs rather, iPads, all the rest of that stuff, that's big. But the fact that services, just on a reoccurring basis, that they get these billions of dollars, I see more reasons for why the market should be up here than why it should be down.
I don't know if this makes sense or not, but maybe as an investor, that is a person who wants to retire someday and has maybe a 401k or some sort of investment scheme that's weighted in stocks, maybe you don't even care as long as, of course, your portfolio includes those, right? I mean, if the market is up based on the strength of a handful of stocks, the market is still up. If you're in an index fund or if your funds are participating in those equities, then your investments, your retirement funds are doing relatively well.
Exactly right. And you'd be hard-pressed. You'd actually have to try to not participate in those funds if you're in the market. Because whether it's the S&P 500, whether it's a NASDAQ fund, even if it's the Dow Jones, which, of course, not a lot of funds track that, but the performance of all these is driven by those same names that you and I talk about every week, John. I mean, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, those are those mega caps, and they make up a significant percentage, especially in a cap-weighted index like the S&P 500.
John DeJarian's on a phone line. Look at this headline. We'll talk about this in a moment. Three top growth stocks to buy right now. And relative to that, here's another headline. Zoom is no longer the best performing work-from-home stock. Let's talk about that in a minute. John DeJarian joins us. We're talking a little bit about the stock market. We always do with John. MarketRebellion.com is his website, financial news and education site. That's MarketRebellion.com. Three top growth stocks to buy right now. This is from The Motley Fool, John. DocuSign, Zoom Communications, and also Shopify is being fueled by powerful long-term trends. Retail sales are shifting online at an accelerated pace due to, in part, the COVID-19 crisis. Shopify helps small and increasingly large businesses build and grow their online operations. Now, what do you think of those three stocks or areas?
Shopify has tripled since the lows of this year. That is amazing. The stock just has cut deals with Walmart as well as Facebook. Facebook, of course, that was big news for both Shopify and for Facebook, because when they cut that deal, they basically were saying, look, if you want to run your own store through any of the Facebook apps, which include Instagram and Facebook, obviously not so much their communication app, WhatsApp. But nonetheless, if you want to run your own stores, they would facilitate it, and Shopify would benefit. Now they've cut a deal with Walmart as well. So this stock is up 25% in a week. I mean, it's just kind of crazy, but Motley Fool is obviously seeing the volume of trade in these stocks in Zoom, which, of course, is how many of us are communicating with family, friends, and business people over the Internet. And then I think that these all three continue to do well, but I'd be hard-pressed to say they will do as well over the next 3 or 6 months as they've done over the past 3 months.
I get that. I'm just reading here Zoom's first quarter revenue. First quarter revenue for Zoom, $328 million. And then DocuSign, which a lot of us are familiar with. You can digitally agree to paperwork without having to actually sign physical things or be in somebody's office. John, is it too late for all of these kinds of companies that if you think, I should be in anything that enables people to work remotely, but maybe it's too late. The prices are too high. What do you think about that?
I think many of us discovered stocks like these because of COVID. And the thing is that we're all creatures of habit. So as much as the fact that Google has Meet and Microsoft has Teams that compete with Zoom, for instance, a lot of us will use what we're familiar with, what we're comfortable with. And it is hard. It's like digging out a Mississippi tick to get people to switch from something they're familiar with to something that they're not. Doesn't matter who the provider is, if it's Microsoft or if it's Google. So I would think that many of these stocks will continue to benefit, but I just don't think it'll be quite as rapid an increase in valuation as we've seen since COVID began.
Before the break, I said Zoom is no longer the best performing work from home stock. I've never heard of this company, Fastly, F-A-S-T-L-Y, but I am familiar with some of their services. That is, Fastly's technology helps consumers more rapidly view and retrieve digital content. Its customers include e-commerce software provider Shopify and the music streaming service Spotify and the messaging app Slack. Those have all gone up, and Fastly is the beneficiary. Shares surged 15% yesterday and are now up 60% over the last 7 trading days. Now, there's another one I missed the boat on, John.
Yeah, this is one that, knock on wood, this is one that I didn't know you were going to talk about, but I would have cited it for both unusual option activity, which we have in this name, and exactly the drivers that you mentioned. I mean, again, if you are Shopify, how can you continue this pace? Because they have absolutely crushed it with all of these companies that they've just done deals with. But in this case, they haven't done a deal with them. They depend on this Fastly FSLY to make sure that things operate as quickly as possible when people want to point and click and buy or set up a shop on Shopify. So I think that one's going to continue to do well. It's, again, cloud delivered. So all of those sorts of things that when you're talking about cloud delivery, where the person can just do it remotely, those are fabulous growth opportunities. And Fastly is one of those outperformers that probably will either get bought by somebody like a Microsoft, which is one of the things that I'm looking at, or it will just grow like a weed because it's basically embedded in so many apps.
Right. Is there another stock or sector you're liking right now or paying attention to?
Well, again, I liked AstraZeneca because of their multiple shots at a COVID vaccine that Dr. Fauci talked about. I also like INO. This is a company that the military just cut a deal with them for a COVID test that I think is going to be pretty interesting as well. That's not a vaccine, the INO. But nonetheless, it's a stock that's getting a lot of love today.
I don't know the company that makes it, but I believe Andy Mazur, who does sports for us, was telling me the other day that if Major League Baseball returns, one of the things the players will want is a sort of wristwatch-like, almost Fitbit, that will display your proclivity for COVID-19. It'll take into account your heart rate, your temperature, some other environmental factors. I'm not sure what this thing will know, but the players will have something that will tell them something about their chances for the virus.
That's very similar to this one, what it's going to provide to the military. So I think that they would use those devices not on a 24/7 basis, but use them on a basis when they're, for instance, before and after the games, or in the case of the military, before and after deployments in certain areas where they might be more likely to meet a crowd where COVID might be more widely spread.
The president is touting another stimulus package. We don't have the details yet, but it might be as generous as the last. Does that bode well for markets? Does that bode well for the economy?
It does. You saw how quickly the markets reacted negatively to potential news of a trade war that Peter Navarro was talking about last night, one of the president's trade advisors. But things like that are not what the president's going to be looking for an attempt at a re-election here. So I think that whether it's trade war talk or whether it's talk of additional stimulus, I think you're going to see a lot of support from the president or any sitting president for things like that into a re-election cycle.
I can see why that would be politically advantageous, but does anybody care about the deficits we're racking up?
No. That's the short answer. I mean, and I've heard people that I respect an awful lot, John, say that they do care about the deficits, but this is not the time when you would put caring about the deficits ahead of the damage that's, you know, basically been mandated by the government onto these businesses and obviously to the people that work at these businesses, in particular consumer-facing businesses.
So does there come a point, though, where the market does factor this in? I mean,
yes, 2022.
Are you being facetious?
No, I'm not. It's easily that far out. Because for the short term, the biggest benefit beyond the consumer is the government, because the government is a far bigger borrower. And the fact that they're pushing down borrowing rates for the short term in particular means that some of that debt really starts to come due in 2022. So probably 6 months before that, you'll hear an awful lot of jawboning about that. But before that, I don't think so. I don't think anybody jumps out in front of that one.
President, according to the New York Post, said he supported the idea of giving Americans a quote-unquote very generous second round of financial aid to counter the effect of the shutdowns, the ones that you describe as government shutdowns, and I understand that. We will be doing another stimulus package. It will be very good, very generous, he told Scripps Networks. Another $3 trillion bill passed the House of Representatives May 15th that contains a second round of economic stimulus payments of up to $6,000 per household. But the GOP-controlled Senate has not taken up that package. So the House has signed off on it, and the president likes it, but the Senate is not doing anything about it, and that's just sitting there, huh?
And it's likely to sit there until they negotiate out some of the things that are in the bill, which, quite frankly, as most bills, this is not a Republican or Democrat thing, but whoever passes a bill in the House, in this case the House-controlled Democrats, are going to put in things for that spending package that they like, but might have very little to do with this actual stimulus. And so I think a lot of that needs to get kind of weeded out of it. It's why there was no discussion of that bill and no Republican participation in the passing of that bill.
Do you think a decision will be made ultimately on this before the election, right?
Oh, I think it'll be made before the end of July, because that's when the money runs out. The additional, as you know, the additional $600 per week, yeah, is one of the main supports that we're talking about here, and that runs out the end of July.
Yeah, that's such an interesting part of the package, right? Because some people are making more money with that in being unemployed than they were when they were employed. What happens when that runs out? Does that get people more motivated to take jobs back, or people to hire them, or do they double down and keep handing that money out? John Najarian is the founder of MarketRebellion.com. Okay, John, thanks for your time, as always. We'll visit again next week.
Thank you, Jeremy. Take care.
MarketRebellion.com. 12:34, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman is our producer. We have been following through the pandemic how local businesses of all stripes are doing. We are all very interested in the restaurant and bar business. Both of those subjects, I guess, we can cover with R.J. Melman. R.J., it's John Williams, and you're on WGN. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, John.
President of Let Us Entertain You Enterprises, the Let Us Entertain You restaurant family is, what is it, 85 now nameplates for you guys?
We had about 60 different concepts, but about 100 restaurants across the country.
How many employees are you guys then employing?
About 7,000 or so.
How many of your restaurants are open right now?
We have in Chicagoland, I would say we have about three quarters of the company open in some fashion. In Las Vegas, where indoor dining is allowed, so those are running more regularly, even though at restricted capacities. And then in Illinois right now, I think as everyone knows, we're patios only, moving towards some amount of indoor seating, depending whether you're in the city or in the suburbs, on Friday.
Sure. I want to talk to you, of course, about the Illinois and Chicago thing, but just for a minute. So in Vegas, you can sit inside. Is it 50% capacity, you said?
Exactly. It's 50% capacity on the strip.
And are you able to do that profitably?
You know, it's yet to be seen. It's certainly a lot lower sales than last year, and when you start to factor in rent and all those things, it is getting challenging. You know, in general, restaurants were built to be at making their money in that 100% capacity range. We're obviously all trying to figure out creative ways to do that. You've seen so much creativity from the industry. But also at the same time, we want to respect that we need the country and the cities that we're in to be safe and our employees to be safe. So if that's a short-term sacrifice, we're more than happy to make that.
It's kind of a back-of-the-napkin thing then, right? Like, we have to pay the rent no matter what, but we don't have to buy the food unless we open up. But if we open up, then how much money are we going to make on that food? So I imagine you were trying to estimate if, in fact, it would be profitable.
Yeah, and it's hard. You know, there's a lot of additional costs that have come about from COVID in general. You know, just the cost of the additional PPE, masks for employees, the extra sanitizer, the cleaning procedures. All those things are kind of hidden costs that people don't think about. But at the end of the day, we are just, like, truly thrilled as restaurateurs and people who want to be social, to not be locked up in our houses at some point, and to really start serving food and being happy about that.
One last thing about, though, then, and is it possible opening a restaurant, in fact, causes you to lose more money than staying closed? Is that a possible scenario?
Oh. No, it's 100% a possibility that I think there are a lot of people out there. You know, there's a lot of cost to getting business up and going. And, you know, there's terms with vendors that kind of need to be negotiated. But, yeah, there are even when you open a new restaurant, a lot of people go backwards for those first couple of months. So reopening a restaurant wouldn't be tremendously different. But no, it's very easy if you're not careful to go backwards and being very sensitive about how to do that.
You're damned if you don't, because if you don't open up, you got to get back in the game, even if you're losing money as you go.
Exactly. You got to, you know, the easiest way to make adjustments is to just by doing it. And we have learned a tremendous amount from even just opening patios. And then we learn a lot from opening the dining rooms that we have out of state. And if you're not moving in that direction, it makes it very hard. If you're sitting on the sidelines, it makes it hard too.
So. What are you learning from opening up the patios in Chicago?
Well, I mean, it's just so wonderful to see people back. It's amazing to see regulars and people who have supported us over the years and just how quickly those people have come back. And, you know, we're learning a lot of this is the first time ever where we haven't really had a solution. What happens when it rains? So, you know, we're learning how to pack up food really quickly to go and send to go. And hopefully people aren't too mad at us because that's what the rules are. But, you know, you forget when it's patios only, there's just a cadence to getting back to work. You know, work servers are wearing gloves often, you know, with delivering food. They're always wearing masks, temperature checks. So there's a lot of things that are going into reopening as part of those, like, sanitation and extra cautions that take some getting used to. And I think it takes just some practice to get over that hump.
Are you satisfied with the city's plan on Friday and so forth?
Yeah, as long as we're having instructions on why things are happening and moving in a direction that there's some sort of certainty, that is really what's helpful. It's when we don't know what's going on that it's not, and we're really supportive of how they've handled the situation in the city, and I care that the city of Chicago is getting healthier, and we are just, you know, a cog in that in the city, and as long as we feel that Chicago is safe, I'm totally happy with what's going on.
You know, one thing I think was interesting to see how adaptive restaurants became was the take-it-home packs or the, you know, like a dinner for four, a Mother's Day dinner for four, a Mother's Day brunch for four, not just holidays, but like on a Friday night, here's the pizza and wine pack. And that's been a really fun alternative for a lot of us.
Yeah, I think Zoom, you know, Zoom wine dinners. There's been so much creativity in our company, what I've seen across the country with restaurants. It shows, I think, what a great, resilient bunch of people restaurateurs are and how they can react to different situations. But you have to remember that literally overnight, our sales went to zero. And there's not too many industries that can survive when their sales go to zero. If your advertising at WGN went to zero, what happens? You know, it becomes really, really, really difficult to maintain. And it's amazing how people kind of figured out ways that they could continue to drive sales, and even if it was a modest amount, or just help cover things and keep ourselves interested as well, and keep ourselves, you know, working. So I love it.
The namesake RJ Grunt Salad Bar, RJ Melman, what's going to happen to that?
It's a good question. It seems like it probably won't open in this next phase, but, you know, you hope when the phases lift themselves. It seems like salad bars or self-serve bars require someone working there full time, kind of plating it for you, so you can have a buffet style, but as long as they're serving it to you. But the configuration of RJ Grunt seems to indicate that that will be very difficult.
So what's the future for that one?
So you're gonna be getting a burger for a little bit. You're gonna be getting a burger and a milkshake, and the salad will have to wait a month.
Yeah, no kidding. What else in the future do you see as a different part of my experience at a Let Us Entertain You restaurant?
Well, maybe just not lettuce in general, but I think across the country you're seeing, I think a couple things that might not go back so easily. You're seeing a lot of restaurants moving over to Tock for reservations for Open Table. I think that you're seeing that deposit. As you know, the certainty of a reservation showing up is really important, especially in a restricted dining room. And you're seeing a lot of our restaurants, but I know thousands of restaurants across the country have switched to Tock, and they're switching to, which is an alternative reservation system.
Yeah.
And they are having deposits for reservations, and you know, which is something that I'm not sure Open Table can do or does do as well. And you know, I'm not versed in the technology of how they work, but I think you're seeing that kind of happen. You've seen it clearly happen in airlines and hotels for years where you put a deposit down or you pay for the room before you arrive. And I'm not saying people are going to be paying for the full meals, but the expectation that someone would be making a nominal deposit, I think, won't go away, especially in a world where the only certainty you have is that reservation coming in.
I noticed when I was at Osteria Viestado not long ago, they asked me I made a reservation online, and they asked me what my experience was. They seemed very interested in what the user experience was, and I appreciated that. Nobody ever asked me before. Very quickly, RJ, I noticed that you guys also said something about the whole Black Lives Matter movement and the systemic racism that we're all trying to come to grips with right now. And your statement included this: we need to do better. Why did you say that? What did you mean by that?
Well, I believe that we are a company that has that does and will continue to care about all of its employees. And I think that that doesn't mean that we haven't done as much as we can to promote diversity and just take a tackle of how we handle helping our communities from our charitable efforts, or at least making it a concentrated part of what we're doing. And at the end of the day, I think there are very few organizations that couldn't do better. And I am so supportive of those efforts to really improve how we train, develop, recruit, across the company. And why not be, we have always prided ourselves of not trying to be the biggest, but trying to be the best. And why not try to be the best in that world too?
Amen to that. RJ Melman, president of Let Us Entertain You Enterprises. Nice to talk to you again, and continued success.
Likewise.
Can't wait to get back out there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate you joining us. It's 12:43. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute. This is Steve Bertrand.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. The Illinois business world is watching as Governor Pritzker prepares to outline plans for moving into phase 4 of the pandemic recovery. You can hear that live on WGN Radio at 2:30 this afternoon. Northwestern University is cutting up to 200 workers as a result of a buyout program it offered to thousands of employees because of the pandemic. The school has already furloughed 250 workers, and you'll have to wait a bit for a new thrill ride atop the Aon Center, the third tallest skyscraper in Chicago. The new observatory and more has been put off almost a year because of the outbreak. They plan to start work on the $185 million project in the second quarter of next year. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Orion Samuelson's looking at the agribusiness front. Hi-o.
Hello there. We're a quieter market than Wall Street today, but we're mixed, really, on the prices at the moment. The July wheat contract is up a penny a bushel at $4.86. July corn, though, is down 3.5 cents at $3.24¾. And July soybeans down a penny and a half a bushel at $8.74¾. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The July lean hog contract is up 45 cents a hundredweight. The August live cattle contract up $1.40. And the August feeder cattle contract is up $1.17. As we looked at the weekly crop condition reports issued yesterday afternoon, we're having a far better year than we did a year ago because conditions are generally in the good to excellent category for corn and soybeans, and planting pretty well finished for those two crops, and winter wheat harvest continues in Illinois and wheat harvest states. Interesting request from the soybean buyers in China today, because that's the country that's generally referred to as the beginning of the coronavirus. But today, soybean buyers from China are asking exporters from the United States and other countries to guarantee coronavirus-free cargoes. They're asking that to have them sign a letter guaranteeing that their cargoes are not contaminated. And the move comes as China tries to prevent any risk of new COVID-19 infections from imported goods, as it takes aggressive measures to contain a recent spike in the coronavirus infections linked to a sprawling wholesale food market in Beijing. The U.S. and Brazilian Departments of Agriculture did not immediately respond to Reuters as they requested more information, and they didn't get that yet, so we'll have to wait and see. But at the same token, the China-U.S. Trade Agreement Phase 1 that was signed back in January, according to officials on both sides of the Pacific, that is still in effect. And the feeling is that the countries will conform to the agreement in that Phase 1 China-U.S. trade agreement. That's Your Money on 720 WGN.
It is now 1250. This is WGN. The Wintrust Business Lunch continues with Amy Guth, business reporter, whose conversation will include, let's just start with this, Amy, some of the upgrades to the OS for Apple. And I'm just looking at some of these things. Every time somebody changes how your iPhone works, you hate it and then you love it. I don't know if that's your attitude about it, but I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about these.
No, that's pretty much it. That's how I feel about it, too. That, you know, you're like, you're in such a habit of, oh, this app is always here. It works this way, or I swipe this way to do this. And then every time the iOS upgrades, you kind of have to relearn some new things. However, I think there's some pretty interesting changes coming to this that are going to look pretty significant. One of them is mini apps. So it won't be the whole app. It'll just be kind of the shortcut you use a lot, but it'll look really tiny. So we're going to see what that looks like. Privacy, there's a lot of upgrades to how you can control your privacy settings. One of those is, instead of sharing your exact location with an app, you can limit that to kind of a general location. You can say, I'm in Chicago, not necessarily at this address at this intersection. So there's some privacy controls that I think are pretty interesting. That's going to be part of the big thing. One I'm very excited about personally is that when you get a phone call, it doesn't take over your whole screen. And if you're watching a video, you can do other things. Because I feel like, you know, you're looking at a video, you're doing something. If a text message comes in, don't stop the video. I just want to answer the text real quick, you know. And then you have to kind of go back and find the video again. This will let it keep kind of going. So I think both of those are kind of interesting. That's probably a lot of user feedback there of people going, hey, do I have to, you know, get back into the video? Can I just answer my text quickly? Things like that. Digital car keys are coming, and some a more upgraded translation app, which I think will be really interesting, as a lot of, you know, there's so many translation apps. There's a lot of, you know, there's from like Google Translate to Say Hi, which is one I've used a lot. They're going to embed some of those right there in the iOS. So I think it'd be really interesting. But again, right, there's always that learning curve where everyone's kind of learning the new layout of their phone and getting angry and complaining on social media and all that. So once we get it sorted out, it seems like it'll be pretty good upgrade, but there's always some bugs to squish and find and things like that.
This came out yesterday, right? So I don't know that my phone is upgraded to it. Maybe I'm not automatically doing it, but these are changes in place now, right?
So these are going to be rolling out. So the Worldwide Developer Conference was yesterday. For the first time, it was virtual. If you picture Steve Jobs up on that stage in front of the crowd of people, that's kind of the big event Apple's known for having.
Right.
And they did this virtually. So it was very different, but you can see it online. They're, you know, they always archive them. You can see about what they do. Another one I think is interesting to what you and I do is there's going to be the voice memos on your phone will be upgraded with a better audio quality. So who knows, maybe some iPhone voice memos will make their way onto WGN Radio at some point.
I got news for you. Some of them already have. By the way,
that's right.
I mean, some of us have had to use that very app, and it's okay,
yeah.
But if it's better, hooray. One last thing about this, then I want to move on. But I use voice-to-text. We all do. I use it a lot if I'm dictating something kind of long and I don't want to type it out, and I think it's terrific. How good are the translation apps? You said you use those. Are they pretty accurate?
I mean, I use them from moving from language to language, but, you know, I think they're generally pretty okay. There's always some, you know, some, like, context that's kind of lost in translation a little bit. Like, I think in English we have so many words that don't actually mean that. You know, not many of our words are very literal. So there's always that kind of gets lost in translation when you're dealing with languages. But, you know, I think more and more people are relying on those. People are using them more. Business is more global. It's kind of a requirement. People want to be able to communicate in a lot of different ways. So, yeah, we'll see as these upgrades roll out.
Talk to me a little bit about the college scene. The University of Illinois is going to screen students, correct?
That's correct. And it's with a saliva test that was developed by university researchers there at U of I at Urbana-Champaign. So that's, and this is a little bit different. We think of a COVID test being like that nasal swab, that, you know, back in the throat from there. This is a little different. This is a saliva test, so a little bit different, a little bit less invasive, but same thing. It'll bypass that RNA extraction, so it makes it a little faster and less susceptible to shortages of scarce testing materials. It hasn't been peer-reviewed yet, but it's, you know, so far testing is good, and they're going to try to roll that out with students. They expect to test about 47,000 students that are heading back in the fall, which I think is really interesting to see how universities are trying to figure out what the fall looks like for workers and, you know, their other, you know, faculty, but other workers too, as well as students, and just kind of keeping that peace of mind, keeping the campus open, and how they'll approach that. So schools that have that big STEM department that have done any work so far this year in COVID research, in COVID testing, I think we'll see a lot of those benefits passed on to students and workers.
We're talking about the University of Illinois at Urbana, right?
Correct.
Are they going to do this at the UIC as well then, do you know?
I'm unclear on that. It stands to reason they probably will. I know that the University of Chicago Medical Center has kind of put into use some of their own proprietary stuff on like a voluntary basis. So I think we'll see this at most campuses, you know, within each university system.
Yeah, no kidding. And I guess that also then presumes, I mean, it sounds like they are going to open up the campus, huh?
Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, I think that's really interesting. That's a decision every family's got to make for themselves and every worker's got to make for themselves. Like, do you feel comfortable sending your kid off to school this fall? But, you know, as of right now, as the state has been reopening, as the city's reopening, schools are on schedule to do the same. You know, Northwestern has, they're making some staffing adjustments, but in that release, they also said, hey, we're you know, going back at it in the fall. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like, how you know, protocols of physical distancing and mask wearing are enforced at schools, how you do that when it's usually a pretty crowded space. So I think there's going to be a lot of learning to be done in the fall of how schools are going to function and how, you know, offices too, but how all these different sectors of industry will function when trying to move back to some sense of normalcy out in the world.
Yeah, well, I'm anxious for the kids to get back onto campus. I'm sure the kids are, too.
I'm sure they are.
Moms and dads are as well. Amy Guth reporting on the business scene. Okay, Amy, well done. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, John.
Just a quick note from the Chicago business page. Northwestern University expects to cut 150 to 200 employees as a result of a buyout program stemming from COVID-19.